Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Robbing and shooting and raping and killing, bloody murder more or less than running airplanes into buildings. Every time I turn around, something else is going wrong. Yeah, tell me, what the hell is going on?
Welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And welcome back to the Rusty Satellite Show. This is Rick Redding, your host, back on another beautiful week in Louisville, Kentucky, my hometown, at the Louisville.am studios here in the Highlands. There's a lot going on this week, and I am excited once again to have some wonderful guests to talk about some issues that are important to the city and maybe a little bit of fun. And I'm going to have some fun with the show today as well. My first guest is Jerry Miller. Jerry is the Metro Councilman in an East End district, heavily Republican, and he has some great opinions. I really called him and asked him to be on the show just because I thought he agreed with me, and he mostly does. But we talk a little bit about what's going on with the Metro Council and his political future. Jerry has decided not to run for the Metro Council again when his term is up in 2014. We'll talk about that and about the crazy Metro Council's discussions about alcohol and what's going on there and how they're wasting their time down there talking about what time liquor stores should close. At least that's my opinion. But my second guest is John Cosby. John is, I learned 5 years ago or so, and I've known John Cosby a long time in business around here in Louisville. But 5 years ago, I learned that we actually drank beer at the same fraternity house in Bowling Green, Kentucky, while we were students at Western Kentucky University. He had about a 10-year head start on me, but it's really interesting to see the people in this town that you cross paths with and what you have in common with them. So I had a great time talking to John. John is with the Jeffersontown Chamber. He's the president, and this is the big week there in J-Town. It's the Gaslight Festival. We talk a lot about that and some controversies that we've had in the past out there in Jeffersontown, where I used to live, but don't anymore. So anyway, buckle in, spend the next few minutes with me here on the Rusty Satellite Show. I'm looking forward to talking about some local issues and some really interesting moves by the media and controversy, I guess, is one way to put it. But before we get to that, we're going to talk to Jerry Miller, your Metro Councilman. All right, and we're back on the Rusty Satellite Show, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest Metro Councilman Jerry Miller. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Boy, there's a lot going on with the Metro Council, stuff that I want to talk about that I'm interested in. But first, of course, I want to ask, you've recently made an announcement about your political future, and given your relatively short time on the Metro Council, I just wanted to ask you what you're running for and why you've changed why you didn't want to just be a Metro Council member for life.
Well, first off, I'll say that I do believe in term limits, so I was going to limit myself to two terms anyway. And when this opportunity presented itself, when the legislature finally got around to redistricting, and it appears to be a plan that's going to withstand the courts, I really felt that it was an opportunity I needed to seize, mainly because the issues that I've have found myself most passionate about really have to go, you have to go to Frankfort to deal with them. And I've been to Frankfort several times in the last couple of years talking about these issues.
And let me just stop you and say for our listeners, first of all, you're running for state office.
Now, I'm running for the House of Representatives. It's a new House, District 36. It was through redistricting, it was moved from Garrett County here, and it'll be on the ballot in November next year of 2014, and which is when I would have faced reelection had I stayed on Metro Council.
While we're talking about politics, I want to talk to you about why you're running, but that your move sort of began a chain reaction, I think, in terms of who's going to ante up for your seat, right?
It did. It was quite a surprise, actually, when Senator Julie Denton from Senate District 36, who is my state senator, came up to me before the Middletown parade week Saturday before last and said, "Hey, I've got something I want to talk to you about. I'm interested in running for your seat." And after I picked myself up from the ground, because she's an 19-year state senator with a lot of seniority and in the majority in the state Senate, it took me quite a bit by surprise. But after she explained her reasons, that she felt she had done in Frankfort what she wanted to do and wanted to get more involved in local issues.
Okay, so she's getting out of Frankfort. You're trying to get into Frankfort.
Correct.
Right? And your background, I know you, before you were with Metro Council, you were involved in state government. In exactly what capacity?
Well, I was 31 years in the private sector as a CPA, spent most of my career with Humana, and then at about 10 years ago, really felt I wanted to do something different, enter public service, and had an opportunity to go with the newly elected Fletcher administration in Frankfort. And I worked for Jim Host for a couple of years.
Hey,
and
then, so did I.
absolutely. Who's a great mentor.
We'll trade stories off the air there about that.
Yeah, I wish I'd gone to work for the guy at 22 rather than 52 because he about more wore me out.
I was about 22 when I worked for him, so there you go.
Yeah, it was a good experience. And then I became state parks commissioner. Got a little bit more involved with the legislature because I had to go lobby the legislature on behalf of Kentucky State Parks and Historic Sites, and got to dealing with the legislators more. So I got more comfortable with the process. Of course, I had a good financial background because that was my history. And so it really was something that I had in the back of my mind that, gosh, if there was an opportunity, I might try to come back to Frankfort.
Okay. So any idea, you don't have opposition yet, is that a strong Republican seat?
It's overwhelmingly strong Republican seat. I told someone today you would have to be an axe murderer if you're a Republican not to get about two-thirds of the vote out there.
Okay, so let's talk about being a Republican on the Metro Council. Now, you know, you're certainly not in a majority there, and I've sort of, in my years of watching the Metro Council, I've seen a lot of issues come up that are partisan and some that aren't, but you have sort of been outspoken on a couple of issues and been on the side of the coin that I guess I admire in terms of, like, you've talked about limiting the NDF funds and issues like that seem more fiscally responsible than what some of the Democrats want to do. But today we're talking about this alcohol ordinance that I'm just gonna tell you, I think it's pretty darn silly and a waste of time for the Metro Council to be wasting its time talking about when businesses can be open and when they can't. But I'm going to give you a chance to,
sure,
to say how you feel now that you know how
right.
I how
well
I
no
feel
that,
about that.
I appreciate you tipping your hand like that. But I have first let me say that on Metro Council, the majority of the issues are not partisan at all. They're like zoning issues and a lot of economic development issues and a variety of things, contracts, things like that. But this is an issue that's not really partisan at all because we've got people on both sides of the aisle, some in favor of it, some opposed, and some in the middle. I fall in the camp of I'm generally have a little bit of a libertarian streak, I don't have a problem with regulating businesses fairly. Mm-hmm. Where it came to the point where I did not agree with what Councilwoman Brian Hamilton was trying to do is she was trying to make a distinction between malted beverages, beer, et cetera, and those that the state regulates as liquor, which is wine and distilled spirits.
All right. So why would you outlaw one and not the other? I guess is the
that point, was right? My point. It is when you really get down to looking at, all right, what do people buy if they're trying for a quick drunk, I guess. Well, you buy a 40-ounce bottle of malt liquor, or you buy a six-pack of beer, or you buy a bottle of wine or a half pint of whiskey. And actually, of all those, it's the malt liquor and the beer that have a higher content in the quantities that people buy at a package store. Because this rule doesn't affect liquor by the drink. It has no impact on liquor by the drink. So it's just about when you go into a store and you pick up a bottle of wine or beer or whiskey, rather. And to me, it's alcohol is alcohol. The problem isn't alcohol. The problem is where people congregate at 2 a.m. or 3
right,
a.m.
Right, and
or
exactly.
4 a.m.
This ordinance is obviously, number one, the Metro Council spent a lot of time on this ordinance, and you know, I don't think that's right. But number one, they're talking about this is going to reduce crime in the West End. This keeping closing package stores for 2 hours on Saturday night. You know that we're going to see a noticeable difference in crime. I'll admit I haven't read all the evidence, but I mean, you've heard the deliberations in Metro Council and in the chambers, and is that argument hold water? Is there anything to that? Do you believe it?
Well, I don't believe that alcohol causes crime any more than drugs causes crime, but it's incident to a lifestyle and a behavior that alcohol, I think, amplifies, and drugs amplify crime, because if you're congregating at 2 or 3 a.m. at a place, chances are if there's something evil on somebody's mind, they're probably thinking about it if they get a little alcohol in them or illegal drugs in them. So, again, I don't think that the beverage of choice is as much the problem as it is the fact that these places are open between 2 and 4. Just for your listeners' sake, no place in Kentucky, Louisville included, will sell you any alcohol between 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. So, and only in Louisville can you get anything between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. In many places in Kentucky, you can't buy alcohol between midnight and 6 a.m. So all this is regulatable. The question is, what's the best way? In some ways, I think we're trying to, as you say, Rick, it's a little bit overboard. Yeah. I think there is a solution I'm going to propose today, and that is, I think we have the power to do this on a precinct or council district basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the county attorney's been asked for an opinion on that. We haven't gotten that yet. Hope to get that later today.
Well, I understand what you're saying. It kind of makes sense to me, you know, the whole state of Kentucky's alcohol laws are idiotic. You know, that you don't know from one county to the next where you can buy what and all that. I mean, they should just wipe the slate clean and have the same laws for everybody.
But, well, good. You know. Let me follow up on that one point, because it's a good one. There's actually a lawsuit that the grocery companies like Kroger have filed against the state of Kentucky because they distinguish between wine and whiskey and beer. They let Kroger sell beer, but not wine.
I know. If you've ever been to the Meijer over in New Albany, I mean, it's the biggest collection of it's a bigger liquor store than anything here in Louisville, and it's right there in the middle next to the bananas and the stuff. And
right.
And you know, that's, you know, it's a free product. I mean, it's a legal product. I don't see why, you know, we have to have these rules in Kentucky. But the last question, we'll get off the subject, but I just want to ask you one question: is this alcohol problem, this alcohol issue that's before the council, is that a good use of the Metro Council's time?
Well, if you go to look at the reason that Sherry Brian Hamilton and the co-sponsors have proposed this, is because of crime. Okay. And they believe, and actually there is a Brookings Institution study that lends credence to that belief, is that not necessarily the alcohol, but again, the existence of places that sell alcohol are drivers of crime, because again, people just happen to congregate there because their parking lot is typically got some lights in it and they're open and other people congregate there. And But again, I think they miss the mark when they try to focus it on liquor and wine and not all alcohol.
Okay, and lastly, how do you think this is going to turn out? Is this going to pass, or are we going to have this? It's going to be in the headlines, I know, but...
Well, as we speak, the committee is meeting in less than an hour, and frankly, I'm not sure how they'll vote. I really don't. I believe they will choose to treat all alcohol the same, or they won't do it at all.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. I just got a couple minutes left, Jerry, but I want to ask one other issue, this Ban the Box initiative. I know it's gotten the attention of Washington, and just for our listeners to know, it's an issue in which if you're going to apply for a job, the people behind this ordinance want to make it illegal to ask if you've been convicted of a crime, if I'm correct. And, you know, there's an initiative to require employers to not ask that until you get further along in the interview process. I guess you can ask it later in the process. So just one take, your opinion on this initiative and what you think is going to happen there.
Well, I think this is a part of a much larger issue that actually Senator Rand Paul raised very recently about whether are we too quick to put someone in a felony conviction and then hold that against them the rest of their life.
Right.
So that's a really big issue. What this is treating almost a symptom of the issue. Problem I have with it is not that they want government to do that for their own hiring purposes. I'm okay with that if that's the route we choose. The way it's described is the ordinance says anybody that does business with city government, and that is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of businesses, and some that are so large, they're just going to laugh at us.
Right.
And it's just not practical for them when they have operations in 30 states to have one set of rules for this municipality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, again, like the last issue, you know, is this really something that's going to make a difference in people's lives? And is it something that is going to do more harm than good? I guess that's up for debate.
It's always the unintended consequence that plagues legislators.
All right. All right. Well, we're about out of time here, Jerry, but I really appreciate you coming back to the Highlands here at the Louisville.am studios for the Rusty Satellite Show. And again, you're running in 2014 for the State Senate District.
The State House District 36.
State House District 36. So we'll keep that in mind. And, you know, the election season will be upon us before we know it. So anyway, thanks again, Jerry, for coming by and talking to me here on the Rusty Satellite.
Thanks, Rick, and please ask me back.
Learn about the movers and shakers in the Louisville business scene with Startup, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. A new episode every Tuesday at Louisville.am.
All right, I just want to say thank you again to Jerry Miller for coming by the studios here at Louisville.am in the Highlands. And I should let you know that subsequent to our interview, which took place on Tuesday, the Metro Council went in and decided to table the alcohol ordinance for the West End for another 2 weeks, extending the amount of time that our local legislative body is wasting talking about what time liquor stores should close in the West End. I guess you can... You can feel my opinion on that. So it's just it is a colossal waste of time, and I don't think they're going to accomplish their object, which is to curb crime in the West End. I came across another story. I'm going to talk about a few things, but I came across another story this week that I thought was sort of funny. In relating to 4 a.m., there was a story about a brawl outside a strip club on 7th Street, and you know, I just love the way these crime stories are written in the media, and I actually can't remember where. I think it was WDRB's website where I saw this story about the 7th Street Road brawl in the parking lot at 4 a.m. You know, by that logic, everything in town should close at 4 a.m. and then nobody will be out, nobody will be committing crime, nobody will do any of that stuff. But in this particular strip club on 7th Street Road, the story was that shots were fired, which attracted the police, and some guy who was involved in an altercation had run into some cars in the parking lot, and it was you know, just a typical people doing stupid stuff because they were probably drunk or on drugs. They were, you know, they were out at 4 a.m. and you're always up to no good if you're out at that time. But I just thought the interesting piece about the story was that the reporters at WDRB, they actually found a neighbor in this neighborhood next to the strip club, and you know, the premise was the neighbor said that, well, we just never expected anything like this to happen in our neighborhood. Like, well, you moved next to a strip club. You know, that's what that neighborhood is about. So I don't know. It just struck me as funny. So, you know, say what you will about that. And if you want to stay out of trouble, you know, maybe being out at 4 a.m. is not a good idea. But on a more serious note, I noticed that Rand Paul was in town this week. And you know, I've never been a fan of the Tea Party and Rand Paul in particular. You know, but now he's mounting a run for president. People are taking him seriously. And he is really courting the African-American vote. And this is something that Rand Paul has done that I really admired. He has basically talked to folks in the West End to talk about his position on getting the his position on getting convicted felons, once they've served their time, the opportunity to vote. I found out that Kentucky is one of the most restrictive states in taking away voting rights for convicted felons. Now my feeling is that if you commit a crime, you're convicted, you go to jail, you serve your time. Once you serve your time and you're out, you know, you should be granted, you know, the rights of other citizens, because you've served your time, you've done, you know, not necessarily being rehabilitated, but you know, the state has decided what your punishment is. You've served that punishment. You should be able to go back to your regular life. So Rand Paul is in favor of restoring voting rights to those who have served their time and are out again. So I really think, I believe that Rand Paul believes that that's the right thing to do, and I'm not sure that that's the position of the entire Republican Party. So I admire him for doing that. And secondly, you know, I'm less happy about his other view is that they should be allowed to carry around guns. But you know, the more I think about it, the more my position has evolved on that. Again, I go back to, if they've served their time, they should be allowed to do what other citizens do. They shouldn't have a special, you know, a special stigma attached to how they can live their lives and go about things. It goes, I feel the same way about the whole sexual predator laws that tar these people, you know, that label them for life and have people going after them and because they, you know, can't find a place to live because these vigilante neighbors won't let them have any peace. And again, going back, if you've seen this, the Metro Council now also has an issue related to the subject. It's called the Ban the Box. And some of the people on the Metro Council are in favor of, they want to outlaw the practice of asking job applicants if they've ever been convicted of a felony. That is a real barrier to getting jobs. And the logic is that if you're applying for a job and you have to check yes on that convicted, have you ever been convicted subject, well, you're never going to get the second interview. You're never going to get a chance to prove yourself. Now, they're saying in subsequent interviews that it's okay to ask that, but you know, I'm concerned, like Jerry Miller mentioned briefly in our interview, it's a lot of bureaucracy. It would be really difficult to change things here when a lot of companies that do employment have uniform policies throughout the country. And for Kentucky to be a big exception to that, or even Louisville, that would be really difficult to pull off. So, again, the Metro Council may have some good intentions there, but the the way they're trying to go about it may be misguided. So, all right, now there was one story in the news today, this week, that involves a very close friend of mine, and I just want to talk about it for a minute. If you didn't know, the Courier and the television stations reported on this story strictly from the police report, and that was that former mayoral candidate, former University of Louisville football player, I'm sorry, and ran for state senate just last year, Chris Thieneman, a friend of mine, was arrested and charged with wanton endangerment for a altercation he had with a woman. Now, the stories all quoted the police report, and only one I'll tell you about in a minute took it a step further and actually investigated. Now, all these media organizations put the story at the top of their websites, the Courier, all the stations put it at the top because it involved a very prominent individual who'd run into some trouble. Now, you know, I'm never going to say anything bad about Chris. He's a good friend of mine. He helped me out out of a tight spot a while ago, and he's one of my partners in LouisvilleKY.com, my website. But, you know, let me just tell you the story as it was reported in the media. And it was that a woman and Chris were in a car together, and they were having an altercation. She stopped the car. At some point, both of them left the car right there in the middle of the street. She went inside to a business, her business, the media report said, but I happen to know there's more to that story. And they were basically fighting over a phone. They were, according to the media reports, the police report, they were struggling over possession of a phone. And in the course of that altercation, the report said that Chris had ended up with his arm around her neck and grabbed the phone. So 911 was called. The police came out, and of course they arrested Chris, took him into custody, and he was out after a few hours. But you know, the altercation and the reporting, I don't know. I have mixed feelings. Of course, I've texted Chris shortly after this occurred, and he told me that, you know, he texted me that it was basically all a misunderstanding and that it would work out in his favor. Now, I will tell you that Wave TV took the extra step and contacted an attorney representing Chris, Frank Miscagni, who, you know, gave some good comments in support of Chris, and basically, I think this is a case of a boyfriend-girlfriend dispute that went bad, and it went public. Now, a lot of people think, you know, say that, well, the funny part of the story is when they left the car out there with keys in it in the middle of Brownsboro Road, well, somebody came along and stole the car, and the car was recovered the next day. But it was kind of a sort of a funny side to the story. But the serious part of the story is that you know, if you're in a domestic situation and you can't resolve it, you certainly don't want to be out on a public street and road and stopping your car in the middle of the road. And you really don't want to be squabbling over a piece of property like a phone. And I'm sorry that this occurred. I really feel bad for Chris that because of his prominence and because he's run for office a few times that this becomes a big story in the media. And certainly, you know, I'm not totally blaming the media. They had every right to report the story. And I congratulate Wave for taking the extra step of making a phone call to an attorney rather than just writing it from the police report. But anyway, I think you're going to find out that, you know, Chris was, you know, I don't think he's going to be convicted. I think you're going to find out that it was simply a little domestic dispute. Nobody got hurt, and I wish the best for both parties. But you know, especially hate to see somebody get arrested and put in jail and strung through the media like that. So anyway, that's the way I feel about that. The situation is, you know, that's what That's what the public wants to hear, unfortunately. If somebody in a prominent place gets in trouble, that's our celebrity culture, and it's the way our media works, and we have a local media story, it just trumps everything. So anyway, that's what happened involving Chris Thieneman this week. Chris did tell me in his text he wants to tell his whole story just to me. So hopefully here on the Rusty Satellite Show, we'll have Chris Thieneman here in a few weeks. He was headed out of town, but when he comes back, we'll try to get Chris on. So now there is a whole lot of stuff going on this week. And, you know, my next guest is involved in one of the biggest events. But, you know, this weekend, just to give you a sample of some of the things that just I have the opportunity to be involved in, you know, certainly we're going to talk about the Gaslight Festival. This weekend in Sparta is the Kentucky Speedway Racing, and my employer, Alpha Energy Solutions, is involved heavily in work at the Speedway. And that, if you've never done that, is quite an experience to go up there. I'm also involved in the Riverport Business Association. They have a golf scramble Saturday morning at Iroquois. I'm going to try to do that and then follow up with the University of Louisville home football game against Florida International, which should be like last week, should have been a big rout for the Cardinals.
You love Louisville. You want Louisville when and where you want it? There's something new every day at Louisville.am.
Okay, and I'm here with John Cosby at the Jeffersontown Economic Development Office right before the start of the Gaslight Festival. Very exciting time in J-Town. And I used to live here, of course, but I want to first welcome my guest, John Cosby, to the Rusty Satellite Show. John, good to see you.
You too, Rick. Good to see you. Now, let me clarify one thing real quick. I used to be the Economic Development Director. Now I'm the President of the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. So that means you like host parties and, you know, goof around with people, right? That's I saw the golf clubs in your office.
That's all we do here, Rick.
Okay. Okay. Well, I just wanted to get that straight. But, you know, we've got this great thing in common. You know, fans of the show will know that I'm a graduate of Western Kentucky University, where I was a member of Pi Kappa Alpha. And you, John, believe it or not, I just found this out a couple of years ago, had the same story, right?
Exactly. I'm a two-time graduate of Western Kentucky University over a considerable span of time. And but yes, and we are fraternity brothers.
And like me, drank a lot of beer at 1366 College Street. Right?
I drank one or two there, spent massive amounts of time there, yes, and spent so much time there that I got to spend 2 years in the Army in the middle.
Well, there you go. That's the sort of thing that does to you. But I made it in 4 years somehow. They were glad to see me go, I think. But let me ask you about J-Town and your job here.
Yeah.
I know that I've covered Jeffersontown politics for a long time and you know, made some friends, made some enemies, I guess, because we used to have a fairly corrupt government here. But at least in the last several years under the new mayor, you know, nary a controversial word out of J-Town government. What do you credit that to?
Well, I would take a little bit of exception to the fairly corrupt government statement, Rick. I worked here for 12 years under two mayors.
Okay.
And enjoyed working for both of them. Now, I can't vouch for everything that ever went on. Some politics, you know, lead to other things, but I like both of those guys. I worked for Danny Ruckriegel for 6 years. I worked for Clay Foreman for 6 years. They were very, very different, but I liked them both. They were both good mayors in their own way. There was a lot of infighting and unhappiness. I'll agree with that. And when Bill Dereff became mayor, he basically settled that down and has a much more cooperative situation, I think.
Right. And we can let that go, but I think Clay Foreman, you know, did some things we just won't talk about here. But it was very exciting time for a journalist back in those days, about 3 or 4 years ago. But Bill, I've been very impressed with. It seems like he's hitting all the right buttons. Tell me something about what's going on in J-Town in terms of economic development, what kind of business climate we have out here.
Well, we stay real close to that. Me doing that for 18 years before, I have an obvious interest. And Mike Kometz, who came out and actually took the economic development job after I retired from the city, and I had worked together before. and he's on my board of directors here, and the mayor is too. So I stay pretty in touch with it. The vacancy rate in the industrial park, or the business park as it's called now, is nearing an all-time low. It's in the 5-6% range, which I think the norm is 8-10%, so that's doing well. The mayor, and along with Matt Mounier and Mike Kometz, have a big downtown development project about to kick off here after Gaslight. In fact, anyone that comes out to Gaslight can come to our information booth in the center of town, and there are going to be graphic boards up showing all this streetscape improvement that's going to happen along Taylorsville Road and Waterson Trail.
Oh, really?
Well, so there's a new emphasis on the downtown, which a lot of people have wanted for a long time.
It would be. It sounds like a great project. I know that I talked about the plans. I know there are plans on drawing board for bike trails out here. Is that part of what you're talking about?
That's part of it. But I think they're going to do some of the sidewalk stuff and some of the landscaping and reconfigure some parking. I think there's going to be a couple of signature entrances into the city along Taylorsville Road. One out toward Ruck Regal Parkway and the other down about 6 Mile Lane, literally an arch, I think, over the street.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think there's some exciting stuff. And what we're trying to create here is a sense of place. You know, cities all over the country are trying to create little village downtown feel. Mm-hmm. Well, we've had that all along. So we feel like if we enhance it, dress it up, slow down the traffic so people can notice what's here, that we're a step ahead already. And I think this project's really going to go a long way toward that.
Well, it sounds like a great opportunity this weekend with Gaslight. Now, impress me. Throw some numbers at me. Tell me why Gaslight is such a big deal. I mean, people from all over the city seem to come out here this one weekend a year. And, you know, basically, I guess I would say buy Halloween trinkets made out of plastic stuff or whatever it is they do. But
Rick, you're such a cynic.
Yeah, I know.
Such a cynic. We'll have
I've been to too many of these, I guess.
110 or 15 arts and crafts people. It's a juried fair for that part of the festival. We also have another 100 commercial vendors on the other side of Taylorsville Road, which are business people selling what they do. Okay. So we'll have 200 vendors. We'll have plenty of food for people to eat. We have an entertainment garden with live music.
And beer.
And beer, but that's not the emphasis. We've tried to de-emphasize the beer aspect of it.
Okay. Because I remember a few years ago, there was a controversy over when it closed and all that. And now, when's it closed?
It closes at 10 p.m. Okay. At one time, it closed at 11 p.m. We moved it back to 9 p.m. It was barely dark when it was over, so now we've come back to the middle, and it's 10 p.m.
Okay, so Saturday night, walk up and down the street, do all your thing till 10 o'clock, and I guess you walk over to the bars next door.
You can do that. There's lots of establishments that capitalize on the crowd that we generate and continue on into the night.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Well, you know, I used to live here, and like I said, I lived right along the parade route of the Gaslight Festival Parade. I guess that's Thursday night,
that's
right?
That's tomorrow, yeah.
What do you say to somebody who says, somebody like me, a cynic, who says, gosh, Gaslight Festival, it's the same thing every year. Surely there's not anything new going on this year.
Well, let's start at the beginning, though. This thing started 44 years ago. It was a neighborhood festival. It started down in our old shopping center, which has been redone, J-Town Commons, in the parking lot. And they appealed to the city to, why don't we move it up on the town square, give it a little pizzazz. The city fathers agreed to that the second year, and it's been up here on our downtown street ever since. And I think that's part of the appeal, is that you're literally in the downtown of a city, closed off, and have these events going on. The parade, we like to say, there's 10,000 people watching the parade, and there's 10,000 people in the parade. I mean, every Cub Scout, every dancing troop, people love to be in this parade.
And I did it with the J-Town football team, so yeah, I know.
Most people have done it in one form or another.
Now, I know it's big, but and I know you guys keep statistics. How big is it, and how does it compare with other festivals?
We're ranked, I think, the fourth largest festival in the metro area, and that includes the Kentucky Derby Festival and the State Fair being ahead of us. So I think New Albany's Harvest Homecoming is really the only suburban type city festival that's bigger than us. We'll have and because we don't fence it in, it's open access. People come and go freely all week. We've already 4 days into this. We've been doing things for 4 days.
Right.
We still got four more days, plus the street fair. We think there's probably a couple of 100,000 people that come and go from this thing over the week-long event.
Because I think a lot of people just know, you know, the street fair part right. and all that. And right. there's a whole lot of other events.
There's other stuff.
You know, of course, I mean, who could miss the pipe smoking contest? I mean, that's got to be the biggest attraction.
The oldest gaslight event. The oldest. It may not be politically correct, but we still have some guys doing it every year.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch, right? yeah.
It's a thrill a minute. But look, we started off with a motorcycle rally this past Sunday. We had a golf scramble Monday. We had a 5K last night with 700 runners. Today we fed 1,000 people over at Skyview Park that work in Jeffersontown. Tomorrow's the 10,000-person parade. Friday we have a balloon glow at Skyview Park in the evening, a great family event, as well as set up these 210 or 15 booths up here on the street. And then Sunday afternoon we have a car show as well as the street fair going on with entertainment in the entertainment garden all weekend.
Wow. So that's what you do, John, in your job. You're in charge of all this. You're the man that makes this happen, right?
Me and about 300 volunteers that we could not do it without, and a great staff.
Okay, well, it's a lot of fun. I know I'll be up here getting my annual corn dog, and I see here in the boardroom you have the artwork from, 10, 15 years back?
Yeah.
And so there's plenty to do, plenty to see at the Gaslight Festival, and would encourage our listeners to come out and see it and see
here's,
John Cosby.
Here's my last word on it. It's really a homecoming for the people of this community. Many, many high school classes plan their event around Gaslight Festival and come back and see each other once a year here. And it happens over and over and over. And I think that's part of the appeal, is that it is basically the same. Now, the thing we have new this year is carnival rides up here on the town square for kids. Because we want to have entertainment for kids.
Yeah. Well, it's a great event. And so, John, thanks for appearing on the Rusty Satellite Show.
All right. Thank you very much, John Cosby, for appearing on the Rusty Satellite Show. I really do plan to get out to the Gaslight Festival this weekend. You know, my good friend Mike Maloney is always out there cooking up corn dogs, and somehow he sneaks me one every year. So it's been a great week here on the Rusty Satellite Show. Thanks to Jerry Miller and to my good friend John Cosby for appearing on the show. Tell your friends about this, you know, downloading. You've made it this far, so tell your friends how to do it, because I'm going to have an interesting guest every week. So tune in again next week, and this is Rick Redding signing off.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvillepy.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Rick E. Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to louisvillepy.com, the pulse of the city.